This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. What bills may become law in North Carolina? After yesterday's crossover deadline, the General Assembly was one step closer to finding out, and we are one step closer as well. Bills that did not receive approval in either chamber by crossover are likely to remain dormant. Notable legislation still on the table includes a proposal to increase the number of people eligible for private school vouchers, legislation to curb distracted driving, and a piece of bipartisan criminal justice reform. WUNC Politics reporter Rusty Jacobs is with us to talk about that. And Rusty, this just in, as a matter of fact, just before air, we learned that the state's new democratically controlled Board of Elections will move to oust its longtime executive director, Republican appointee. That would happen next week. And I'm reading this now from a dispatch we printed from WRAL.com, reading directly from their copy. Kim Strack, originally appointed by Republican Governor Pat McCrory in 2013, has technically been on borrowed time since the new board formed in January. Soon after the board's first meeting, state law gave members the authority to reappoint Strack or appoint a new director to a new two-year term in May of, which would expire in May of 2020. Our thanks to WRAL.com for that. Rusty, put that story that just broke into context for us.
So Kim Strack, first of all, a lot of people will maybe remember her name or have seen her image either in newspapers or on reports we've done or on the television, because she took the lead on the evidentiary hearing back in February on the 9th District vote tampering scandal. Regardless of the fact that she was appointed by a Republican, she presented the evidence to the new state board, the new five-member state board that is 3-2 Democratic majority. And that evidence resulted in a unanimous decision by the board to call for a new election. She, as you said, was appointed by Governor McCrory. And you also have to remember that the board itself, the board that's in place now, was constituted in January under after a court had decided with the Cooper administration that a law written by the Republican-dominated General Assembly was unconstitutional. And so the law reverted back to, I think, a 2015 law or earlier, but basically it gave the governor most of the power to appoint members. So now you've got a Democratic majority on the state board, and oust certainly seems like they're trying to get rid of her. I think any objective reader of the news and of the way the investigation in the 9th was handled didn't think she took any kind of a partisan tilt towards that job or towards what she did in that case. But this just may be a case of a Democratic majority board wanting to install or appoint someone that they feel more closely aligned to.
All right. Well, we will stay tuned and find out who Kim Strack's replacement will be.
Frank, let me just also point out that there is a meeting called the spokesman for the North Carolina State Board of Elections issued an announcement that there will be a Monday morning or a Monday telephonic call for the board to handle this issue.
Oh, okay, great. So that's so we'll find out more then next week.
Correct.
Meanwhile, let's talk about crossover and one of the controversial bills that actually passed. It cleared the Senate this week, the Senate Bill 609 that changes who is eligible for private school vouchers. Tell us more, Rusty.
Right. So it should be noted that there's one Democrat who is a co-sponsor of the bill, Ben Clark from the Cumberland and Hope County District in the state Senate. But other than that, it's a pretty much a Republican-backed initiative. And this is a fund that exists, and I think that the legislation would put another $10 million into it in the fiscal year. But basically, it allows families meeting certain income qualifications to get their children into private institutions versus sending them to public school. Now, right now, the legislation, it's in the House. It's been passed by the Senate. It's in the House. It would raise the cap for eligible families. It used to be families at 133% of the amount required to qualify for free or reduced price lunch. That would now go up to 150%. And I think that means families making around $70,000, $71,000 a year would now be eligible. This is causing a lot of problems for Democrats and for opponents of programs like this. But Republicans, you know, have a counter argument. I mean, the Democrats and opponents of it say, look, and then one of the things should be pointed out too, critics of the initiative say that there's already money left in this fund. It's just not getting used because there's not enough people either qualifying or not enough people taking advantage of it. So opponents of the initiative say, look, that's money left over that should be put to public schools. If you really want to help families in need, fund the public schools at a greater amount. But Republicans and backers of the bill say that by raising the cap, you're actually helping people who really otherwise couldn't afford this to take advantage of the program.
All right. Well, let's talk about another one now. And then the Second Chance Act, a number of criminal justice bills filed this session. This one did move on. Tell us about the Second Chance Act.
So, and you also, anybody following this will also remember that a year or two ago, there was a raise the age legislation that passed. Essentially, North Carolina was the last state among 50 to treat with last state with a criminal justice system that treated 16 and 17 year olds as adults. The raise the age legislation passed, and 16 and 17 year olds now are considered juveniles in the criminal justice system. So the Second Chance is all about expungement. You know, anybody who's involved in criminal justice knows how hard it can be for somebody who's got either charges left over on their record or convictions, sometimes from a long time ago, often not involving violent crimes. The Second Chance will make it easier for people in certain situations to expunge their records. That is to get prior convictions of a certain level, misdemeanors or low-level felonies. Again, dealing with that raise the age component, the new legislation would allow people under 18 to file a petition to expunge misdemeanors or low-level felonies from their record for, I think, a charge of like $175. A person charged with misdemeanor or felony after July 1st of 2020, that charge would be dismissed automatically if the charge was not, in other words, if the person was just charged and they were not convicted of anything.
Yeah, I think people might find it surprising to know that even if you're charged with a crime but not convicted, that follows you. And, of course, it makes it very difficult for you to find a job and move forward.
Exactly. And also under the legislation, after 10 years, a nonviolent record, a person could petition, somebody with a nonviolent record after 10 years could have could petition the court for expunction.
This one has bipartisan support.
Correct. Marsha Morey in the House. This is in the House right now, but she's a former longtime district court judge and has seen lots of people come before her when she was sitting on the bench who, you know, get really stuck in cycles. You can really end up trying to dig yourself out of a big hole with just charges or prior convictions of a nonviolent nature. And they create a lot of problems when you're out there trying to put things back together.
Let's talk about a significant bill that did not make crossover, a Senate bill that would have changed the language around sexual consent. Tell us more about that one.
Right, the right to revoke. This is the right to revoke consent. This is stuck in a rules committee in Senate. It has not really gone anywhere, and it's going to take a strong backing to resurrect it now post-crossover. But this essentially says even if a person initially consents to intercourse or a sexual act, they can then revoke that. And a violator, of course, if they pursued that sexual act or intercourse after the consent was revoked, it would be a sexual offense.
All right. That one didn't make it for this cycle. And so if it's going to see the light of day, it may happen in the next session, I guess.
Correct.
Let's turn now to another issue, an event that happened during crossover week and through all of this discussion about legislation, a formal ethics complaint filed against Senate Minority Leader Dan Blue. Tell us about the complaint.
So NC Warn is a environmental advocacy group, and they've filed this complaint against Senator Blue. Senator Blue is a lawyer. He has a law firm, and his law firm has actually done eminent domain work on behalf of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline Project. And you know that's a 600-mile natural gas pipeline that would run from West Virginia through Virginia, North Carolina, I think right up until about the South Carolina border. Now, that project is owned or run by a consortium of Duke Energy, Dominion, and I think PSNC, or there's another natural gas company or an energy company that's involved. But essentially, they're doing eminent domain work. Senator Blue's law firm is doing eminent domain work for that project. Now, Duke is a party to the project, but he says he doesn't actually do work for Duke. The ethics complaint sees the two as creating a conflict of interest for Senator Blue. And he's come out very strongly in reaction to the ethics complaint, saying that anybody who's claiming that he's violating ethics doesn't know his work. And he's been a longtime lawmaker, been in the Senate, been House, former House Speaker. I mean, he's been around a long time.
All right. Rusty Jacobs, WNC politics reporter. Thanks so much, Rusty.
You're welcome.
You can find links to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we learn about the life and legacy of Horace Kephart, who fought to preserve the Great Smoky Mountains. We'll talk about him on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.